the GD, Mike Novak Show with Peggy Malecki. Green, gardening, and environment radio, flavored with a dash of humor. Welcome to intelligent, irreverent talk about plants and the planet they grow on. And here they are, Peggy Malecki and Mike Novak.
I saw some trash on the ground, some on my desk that I found. It was just laying around, and it was in my way. I could have sorted it fast, the paper, plastics, and glass. But I decided to pass, cause it was out of my way. The trash was growing from all we've been throwing. Now it's overflowing. Where you think it's going, baby? Hey, we just get you. And this is crazy.
Sure they do. You just throw it away and somebody picks it up and takes it away.
And then a miracle happens.
And then a miracle. That's the official single stream theme. It's called Toss It, Baby. I found that on the inner tubes. And I'm not even sure who does it, but it's got like 50,000 views on
That's excellent. I've never heard that one.
You've not heard that one?
Oh,
okay.
No.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
You just got to go searching. Welcome, Marta Keene. Thank you for being here. Marta is the recycling program specialist for Will County, Illinois, where she works with municipalities and townships on garbage, recycling, landscape collection contracts, all of that good stuff that I have been obsessed with for years and years. And a lot of people are, too, because part of the reason they're obsessed is they want to do the right thing. Let's start there. Let's start with the positive, because in almost all the articles I read about this, and I did a lot of research, and by the way, my head is exploding all over the room from doing all of that research.
As long as it's recyclable.
It's not. It's organic matter, but I don't know what you can do with it. People want to do the right thing, don't they?
They do. They really do. And for the most part, they do. They have been for many years. And what we've seen, because I've been doing curbside recycling since 1992 programs, we went from the bin where we just had a few items you could recycle back in the 90s. And even then, we had to separate clear glass from the blue, from the green, whatever, and the brown. And we had to separate the newspaper from the rest of the paper. Mm-hmm. And there was very little rest of the paper. It was white only. And, you know, of course, we expanded all that, and it's wonderful. We can recycle so many more things. But beyond that, we also put it all in a cart, and nobody's inspecting the cart. And the education programs that used to exist, the waste haulers and the municipalities used to really be out there educating people, those have all kind of fallen by the wayside too. So now you have two things happening. You have that everything can go in the cart mentality. And when we think about that particular aspect of it, let's think about all the things we've told people they can recycle, but we don't want them to put in the cart. So we've told them they can recycle plastic bags, which are totally recyclable at the grocery store. Okay, at the big box.
In the right place.
In the right place, not in the cart.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And we've told them they can recycle electronics. And so, sure, their TV doesn't fit in the cart, but all those small electronics, they fit in the cart. And, oh, my goodness, that's not where they go either. They have to go to a special drop-off site. So, or if you have special collection, you have to call and make arrangements for it. So there's a lot of things we've been teaching people that they can recycle, but they can't recycle them in the cart. And then you.
let me throw one more into that list, okay? Because I also work in the world of horticulture, all right? And if you're in the world of horticulture, you have to ship plants around. You got to put them in plastic because it's the easiest to clean. It's the easiest to manage. I mean, if you could use paper. It gets wet. It's going to degrade. So plastic has been the container of choice, and the plastic we use is unable to be recycled in most streams in municipalities. Now, why is it? That's insane, because there's so many big black plastic pots and small black plastic pots that are created in the world. You would think that the easiest thing for people to do is put it in your recycling bin so that you can dispose of it properly, but that's not the way the world works, is it?
No, and you know, that's true, too, even of cups. Mm-hmm. So you've seen a big push where a lot of the plastic cups that come out are number twos, like your laundry detergent bottle. And everybody thinks, well, why not be able to throw that in? Because it has that number too, and we've all been trained to look at those numbers. Mm-hmm. But when it gets to that sorting facility, they are not always sure. And unless they're spending...
Who's not sure of what?
That magical, mythical, we were saying, that magical spot where everything gets sorted, that is an industrial plant where things are riding on conveyor belts at high speeds and being sorted by optical sorters that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars per optical sort. So if I say, look at all these things going on the line, and I want you to identify the number two plastics.
Come around here. Look at this photo. You can't see it up there. You see it here. Okay. I took this photo at one of those processing plants, all right? And if you go to MikeNovak.net and you go to the blog, you will see that. And those conveyor belts are going very fast.
Very fast. And those people
have to make split-second decisions about what is going to be recycled, what is not. And sometimes they have to do a second pass. You know, it's just...
And if something's blocked...
Yes.
The sorter's not seeing it properly.
Absolutely. So when you think about it, I always thought the Toy Story movie missed a really excellent chance. You know, when I talk to kids, this is always Toy Story has that thing that I actually wrote them because I'm just that insane.
No, because you're smart.
Well, you know, you're sitting there in the movie theater with your kids and you're watching them say landfill on a big sign. And then they immediately end up on a sorting facility where there's a magnet where a lot of them are clinging to their, you know, for their lives, right? And then once they get done with that sorting process, they end up in an incinerator. None of these things are at a landfill. And so it was very, very concerning for me. But I thought they missed their chance because they didn't even have the eddy current, which is where your aluminum cans get caught. And back when they first started in the 90s, if you put a crushed aluminum can on that sorting facility, it would get missed. And so all of those crushed aluminum cans could end up going to the landfill, even though you had done your best to recycle
them. But didn't they? They told us to crush them.
But then they fixed it. They fixed it.
Okay.
So nowadays, the crushed cans are all getting caught.
Right.
But this is, you have to keep, you know, in mind, this is always changing. They're always trying to do new things. But every new thing that they do costs a lot of money to do. It uses space, and they have to add on to these sorting facilities to make that room.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also have to have personnel sometimes, or equipment, or both, to do the actual sort. So when you talk about the black plastic, you talk about the number two cups. These are things that they also have to have a market for. And I was just talking to a gal in the central Illinois area, and she was telling me that they can't market some of the things we can market up here because who they market. So think about bakeware, aluminum bakeware. One of my favorite things to tell people that they can recycle. And one of my favorite things.
Like a pie tin.
Exactly.
A pie pan.
Right. Or that lasagna tray that has all the burnt pasta on the bottom with the cheese and the spaghetti sauce. It's all crusted in there.
Now I want lasagna.
I guess it doesn't. Yum. So, okay, when you use one of those trays, right, it's aluminum. And so in our markets up here, you could throw that in, even with all that crusty stuff on it, because it's going to go into a 3,000-degree furnace. And it's going to move really quick. So it's not even like it's in storage for a week attracting rodents or insects.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay? This is moving. But when you get other places, their markets will come back to them, and and they will say that's a contaminated item. We can't take that. We only want the cans.
Really?
Yeah. And that boggles my mind because, you know, aluminum parts on a car.
This gets to a really good point, though. And by the way, that's Marta Keene from Will County. She's a recycling program specialist. It gets to an issue that hits people every day, which is our recycling has gotten very complex. And we make a lot of stuff in the world, not just the United States, but the world. We make a lot of stuff, and we make it out of materials that are not easily categorized. And that's part of our problem. So I'll tell you my latest, more brains splattering all over this room, was when I discovered that plastic clamshells for fruit could not be recycled. And I said, well, wait a second. I've been throwing those suckers in there forever because it's got the, you know, and you and I both know, and we should explain this, Marta, when you see a symbol on a product that has the recycling symbol on it, it doesn't mean that it can be recycled. It's merely categorizing the kind of material that it's made of. Now, that's a That's a subtle point, but a lot of people don't get it. They assume, well, it's got a 3, so that 3 goes, that can be recycled because it says 3. Well, that's not necessarily true.
No. When we first started back in the 90s, it was number 1 and number 2 only. Mm-hmm. And it's progressed so much. There's only 7 plastic resins identified. And that's the important thing of what you're saying. That they are representing a category of a plastic resin. So number 1 and number 2 are the most broadly used. Those are our pop bottles. Those are our laundry detergent bottles and our milk jugs.
The PET and
yes, and HDPE. Right. And so, but now we can do the LDPE and we can do all these other ones. V is vinyl. Okay. When you get to number 7, mm-hmm. number 7 actually spells O-T-H-E-R. And it is not an acronym. It is the word other. It can be a combination of those first 6. It could be a brand new plastic they just invented. Mm-hmm. And yet, for some reason, we have been able to say yes to every number in that whole soup except number 6. Number 6 is polystyrene.
Mm-hmm.
And those fruit trays that you just mentioned, the clamshells, those were actually originally, back in the day, number 6s. And the industry made a change, and now today they're mostly number 1s.
Well, then why can't it be recycled?
It's the same problem we're having with the cups and with the planters. It's all on your end market. So that gal I was mentioning from Central Illinois, she said they can still take the bakeware. They still can take aluminum foil, but they have to do an additional sort in their line, and they have to then market that as a much lower grade mixed aluminum scrap. So that's just like if you went to a scrapyard with it, basically.
Yeah.
And so that doesn't have the same value to them. They don't want to encourage that material coming to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can handle it, but they don't want to encourage it because it's not making them the kind of money they need to keep the lights on, to keep those conveyor belts running.
So you're saying it can actually be recycled. Just that they don't.
There's no value.
Little value, right.
Yeah, but there's so many materials like that. You could toss all of them. I mean, you talked about back in the day we used to separate these things.
Right.
And it was really simple. There was paper, there was metal, there was aluminum, metal, and other metal, and there was glass. End of story. We're done here. And then, we better put plastic in there, too. So we started playing. And then we got to single stream. And, folks, single stream is that song you heard at the beginning of the segment, the idea that you can put everything in one big bin. Don't worry. We have the technology to separate that later. But now we're finding out, no, we really don't have the technology to separate that. So you've got all these people who bought into the system,
right. All right,
for 30 years here and who were told, don't worry, we've got it sussed. We'll handle it for you. And now it turns out, no, we don't have it sussed because now they come into your alley and you were talking about you in the lobby. You and I were talking about various places in state of Illinois. Well, city of Chicago has a national reputation as being really bad at recycling. And I'll tell you an example of that. And I don't mind beating up on them because I was president of the Chicago Recycling Coalition for 6 years. And I spent my whole 6 years beating up on them. And I continue to beat up on them because I went to their website this week to see the numbers for 2018. Hey, guess what, folks? There are no numbers for 2018. They didn't even bother to put them up there, okay? They got them for 2017, and that recycling rate is 9.2%, which is abysmal when you consider that San Francisco's is recycling at around 80%, all right?
Right.
So here we got the city of Chicago, and they won't even put up the numbers this year. This is how embarrassed they are, and they should be called out because they don't have the political will to get it done. All right, all you folks running for mayor listening to this show, here's what I tell you. Tell people that they're going to finally get their recycling done in the city of Chicago, and maybe even their yard waste will be picked up, which is not even done in the city of Chicago, even though the mandate in Illinois is that you cannot put you cannot put yard waste into landfills. You cannot do that. And they're looking for that rate to be 25%. Well, in Chicago, it's basically zero. So this is me ranting here for a second. But the point I'm making is that we promised people 3 decades ago that don't worry, we'll take care of it.
Right.
And now it's a ball of confusion to paraphrase now the group is going out of my head. Oh, those guys, you know, I've got sunshine, you know, the anybody song. All right.
Yeah.
No. All right.
I know the song. I know the artist.
We're all just looking at you going, right.
Yeah, really. It's like my brain moves way too fast, okay? That's all right. True. But so there we are.
Well, and I feel bad for the people of Chicago and any of the communities that had the blue bag systems, because now we are trying, really trying to educate people, don't put the plastic bags in the carts. Don't put the plastic bags in your curbside programs. Don't take them to the traditional drop-offs for bottles and cans and throw the whole bag in there.
Take your newspaper out of the bag before you throw it
in. There's little graphics out there where you show it being emptied. The bag is being emptied over the cart. So it's fine if you need to gather it in a bag, but empty the bag. And here you had these people who actually were first introduced to recycling by putting it in a plastic bag. Yeah. So I think it's a really difficult thing to educate people to switch over. But at the same time, I think it's something that, like we started with, people really want to learn the right thing to do. And to that extent, there has been a contamination task force formed for the state that's a working group right now, and they want to come out with educational materials later this year and then hopefully do a campaign statewide next year. But the idea is to identify the things that across the board, not everybody throughout the state can recycle the same things, but everybody throughout the state has the same top items that are contaminants to the recycling. And if we just keep telling people what those are, we could really clean up a lot of the contamination. So plastic bags are number one.
Ah, yes. Bring back the 60s, folks. Sing it, guys.
People moving out, people moving in. Why? Because of the color of the skin. Run, 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 but you sure can't hide.
And, of course, that was The Temptations. Yes, for $200. I'm sorry. Oh, but you didn't say it in the form of a question. Oh, we're so sorry. The Temptations. Who were The Temptations? Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show with Peggy Malecki. You see, don't try to follow my logic, okay? Don't try to follow me ever at any time. I just go off into these tangents. We've got Marta Keene in the studio with us, recycling program specialist for Will County, Illinois. I want to talk just very quickly about a guy. There's various people out there who say that we're just focused in the wrong direction here. This fellow in the New York Times, who's been kind of contentious for a long time, his name is John Tierney. You might be familiar. You're nodding. So you know John Tierney. Yeah. In like 1996, he was already saying, recycling is a waste of your time, okay? He hasn't changed his views since then. He's the dark side, okay, of all this. And he wrote recently, just a couple of years ago, he says, according to the EPA's estimates, virtually all the greenhouse benefits, more than 90%, come from just a few materials, paper, cardboard, and metals like aluminum in soda cans. That's because recycling 1 ton of metal or paper saves about 3 tons of carbon dioxide. A much bigger payoff than the other materials analyzed by the EPA. Recycling 1 ton of plastic saves only slightly more than 1 ton of carbon dioxide. A ton of food saves a little less than a ton. For glass, you have to recycle 3 tons in order to get about 1 ton of greenhouse benefits. Worst of all is yard waste, he writes. It takes 20 tons of it to save a single ton of carbon dioxide. So why are we doing this, Marta?
Well, first of all, you're picking one measurement to gauge everything by, and that's just always a wrong way to look at things. You want to look at things in the whole footprint that we're making in the world. And when you talk about something like glass, well, glass comes from sand, and we tend to have a lot of sand. So you could argue that it's relatively easy to get the resources and make the glass. It's extremely energy intensive to make glass from raw materials. So consequently, the recipe to make glass has always included broken glass. So that means by its nature, glass products have recycled content. And you're saving wear and tear on the furnaces when you're putting in produced glass, because you don't have to use so much raw material and take that whole. So I call it embodied energy, and I'm not alone in that. I got that from someone, I'm sure, and I'm just not giving them credit. But in any event, so it's got embodied energy in every single thing that we use. So when you talk about plastics, plastics are a very lightweight item. One ton of plastic versus 1 ton of glass. I mean, that's just a ridiculous comparison. Yes, they weigh the same, but the amount of plastic that would be filling up a landfill if it was 1 ton versus an amount of glass in a landfill, it's just not remotely the same volume of material. And so I question whenever you decide to just use one measurement. It's the same concept. This is where I'm going to go off.
Okay, go for it.
as when we decide that we're only going to recycle based on the value of the recycling.
Right.
So when we tell people, and yeah, Peggy, you were talking to me this before we started the show, when you're talking to people about having something that's just based on value, then obviously recycling goes up and down. It rides the waves of the market. And so at any given time, somebody builds a brand new paper recycling facility, which was happening a lot in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a lot of things going on in Canada, here in North America, in general, with paper manufacturing. When those plants come online, they just need paper. And the prices would spike. And everybody was going, oh, the paper markets are wonderful, and we're never going to have a problem with paper again. Mm-hmm. And then, you know what? Those markets, they changed as soon as those new facilities started their regular cycles and were running. And then they would have their shutdowns for maintenance. And all of a sudden, the paper prices just weren't very good anymore. They weren't as high. And people who got into recycling when those markets were high, they were all saying, this is fantastic. I'm going to be able to make my bottom line. I'm going to be able to spend all this
get
money.
Get my ROI.
Yes.
My return on investment.
Absolutely. You know, and all of a sudden they're declaring bankruptcy because they never knew that the markets could actually go south. And the same is true before we were in the wars. Okay. The prices for metals were okay. They were fine. You know, and then we went into war. And all of a sudden...
Which war are you talking about?
Well,
we were in constant war.
Well, the two.
Okay.
The two that we were trying
war.
To get out of.
That's our business.
Right.
That's what we do.
Well, that requires a lot of metal. A lot of metal, okay?
Yeah.
So the markets for metal went way up. And then as we started to disengage and lower the amount of troops that we had on the ground and the amount of trucks that we had over there, and really, really step back from that. I'm not going to say we've stopped, but certainly stepped far back. The metal markets tanked, so to speak.
Yeah. No, but yeah, okay, you're making a really good point, which is markets fluctuate. And something I said out in the lobby, and I'll repeat here on air, is who died and decided that recycling had to be profitable? This is the only way we accept it. You mentioned something right at the top of this conversation when I was reading that article by Tierney, and you said, those aren't the only considerations. You know, and you're right. There are other considerations, such as the use of virgin products and how much it takes to extract that and how much water we use to extract virgin products.
And
everything else that goes into it. And yet somebody is sitting on high and saying, well, the only way we can recycle is if it's profitable. Well, I don't buy that. What if I say no? Is the only way we do garbage if it's profitable? No, we do it because we need a sanitary city.
Garbage is always profitable.
Well, of course it is, because there's so much of it. So there you go.
But and no one wants it, so they'll pay to get rid of it.
Yeah, well, you know, and folks, maybe that is what we need to drum into people's heads. You need to pay to get rid of your recyclables. And part of the cul-de-sac we went down several decades ago was when we said, don't worry, it's free.
Right.
We will do this for free. You don't have to worry about it. And now we're stuck with that because people go, well, it used to be free. How come we have to pay for our recycling now?
It was never free. But that was something that a lot of local governments told residents when they were implementing their programs. They literally put the cost, even in their bids, which I've been writing since 92, they would say they wanted to show recycling is zero, put your full cost of the services into the garbage. And it's great to sell it to people
that
way.
Yeah, it helps with buy-in.
Right, absolutely.
And now we have this issue where China has stopped taking, you know, and I love these articles that say, how can China do this to us? And I'm thinking, what? China doesn't have a responsibility to take our garbage. Look, dude, you know, if I were China, I'd probably do the same thing. And it's actually kind of complex, but here's another guy that I've been following, Adam Minter. All right, who's very famous and does a blog called Shanghai Scrap, and he wrote a book called Junkyard Planet. And he's writing another book, and we're going to have him on the show, we hope, towards the end of the year. But in a recent article, he said, in typical low-income countries, less than half of all garbage is collected formally. That's part of our problem. When you look at the world... and what little is picked up tends to end up in unregulated open dumps. In 2015, scientists estimated that as much as 88% of the waste generated in Vietnam is either littered or tossed into uncontained dumps. In China, the rate is about 77%. By comparison, the United States is 2%. So we're actually doing our job here. And what's happening, he claims that 63% of the plastic that's going into the oceans right now, 63% comes from Asia in unregulated countries.
And that much of it is fishing debris.
Yes, a lot of it is.
It's fishing nets and other plastics that it's not cost effective for them.
But the point is they don't even regulate their garbage pickup. And that's a huge problem. Now, as I mentioned to you before when we spoke, I said, how do I control what happens in China, in Thailand, in Vietnam? I don't know.
No, and it's very difficult, and that's, of course, where we talk about trade and trade agreements and asking them to adhere to certain standards. And I can tell you that the...
Good luck with that now.
Yeah, exactly. but the China thing, I mean, we could sit here and say that the China issue is coming because of the trade talks, and I'm not going to say that that's not a factor. I will say that the U.S. EPA will not comment on whether that's a factor, but I can tell you that prior to the Olympics being held in China, they were taking all of our recycling and they pretty much letting the doors open to a wide contamination. And that does not make our material recovery facilities here spend the money and the time and the effort to do better sorting of our materials in that magical, mystical place that we sort everything. And so when you're
that's
basically
where the elves are, right?
Exactly. But literally thousands of jobs.
Yeah.
People talk about the economy and
that's
jobs.
That's the other thing.
Huge. My goodness,
there are millions
create.
Of recycling jobs
Absolutely.
In the United States. So that's another benefit when you say it all has to be free.
Yeah, exactly. But here's the thing. So you let the doors wide open. You say, yes, you can contaminate these and we'll take them and we'll deal with it here in China. And then all of a sudden they want, you know, we don't need this. Well, there's a number of factors. First of all, they're not having, you know, as big a need. They have the world's biggest economy in China, bigger than ours, but a lot of it's lower class. They don't have the strong middle class that we did have. And then the thing with them right now is they're not growing at the same rate. So where they were growing in double digits years ago, now they're growing in single digits, and they're certainly still outpacing our growth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but that means that there is less demand for some of our materials. But however, they have strung the pendulum all the way in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Their contamination that they want now is unheard of. No one's sorting to that level.
Marta Keene, thank you so much for being on the GD Mike Novak Show with Peggy Malecki. In the words of Peggy, it's about...
reduce, reuse, recycle, and refuse.
And rethink. And there's other R's there, too, that we could throw in. But I think the refuse is the big one. Anyway, if you want more information about what's going on in Will County, Illinois, go to willcountygreen.com. And we're going to talk more about recycling in the future. I'm just really glad that the Green Divas audience gets a chance to sample some of this. Until next time, go green or...
go home.
Stadler?
Yeah, what?
Is that it?
Yes, it's over. How'd you like it?
I don't know. I slept through the whole thing.
Well, you didn't miss much.